Support this podcast and keep us going. Go to everydaynovelist.com/support to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 647. Today we hear from Robert, who asks,
I am in the process of choosing an editor for a novel I've written. I have arranged sample edits. What should I look for when I compare the samples? What other factors should I consider? How do I keep good relations with those I don't choose?
Well, first of all, on how to keep good relations with those you don't choose, don't ever ask someone to bid on a job if you expect them to be insulted by not winning the bid. Never do that. It's a really good way to trash friendships. Always, when you're asking someone to bid on a job, always make it clear that you might not choose them and gauge their reaction. And if their reaction, assuming you don't already know their character, if their reaction is such that it indicates that they might get pissed, don't ask them to bid. Or tell them, yeah, you know what, this might not be the right book on second thought for you. That kind of thing. That's the best way to keep the friendships going. Much more difficult is when you have someone, I've been on both ends of this equation, when you have someone who puts a lot of time and energy into the edit, and it turns out not to be the edit you need. Either they are finding problems in your book that you simply don't care about and aren't interested in fixing, or that might actually break your book if you fixed, or they're trying to rewrite your voice, or they're going too deep into the weeds and not giving you the feedback you wanted. I've been on both ends of each of these equations, and those are the situations that are more likely to damage friendships because you have aggrievement on both sides. The writer is not getting what he was really hoping for and depending on, and the editor is not getting any of the massive amounts of time they can sink into this, honored with much of an acknowledgement, and certainly not with it having any effect on the finished product, or even a secondary effect of the writer saying, yeah, I won't make any of the changes you want, but your suggested changes have made me realize that there's something else in a different place that I can change that'll fix all of this stuff. So that's the difficult part, and unfortunately, that's something that you have to learn through the school of hard knocks. There's no real way around it other than finding yourself in that situation and having to work out a peace between yourself and your aggrieved associates. And like I said, I've been on both ends of that equation, and both ends are highly unpleasant. And it is very easy to pick up grudges from both ends of that situation. However, both ends of that situation that I've been on eventually were resolved. We sort of came to a peace, even if there was a parting of the ways professionally. So it can be done. And I'm not exactly the warmest and fuzziest and cuddliest person in the world. So if I can do it...
He is.
Damn it, you're screwing up my prickly image.
Sorry.
Anyway, well, okay. I may be the warmest and fuzziest and cutest and cuddliest person in the world, but I do have claws. So if I can do it, you can do it. I mean, you're Australian, so if you follow the stereotype, you have your own version of abrasiveness, but I figured you can probably work around that too. What you do want to look for in an editor is someone who's, well, first of all, you talked about in your question, or may have been in a different question that's related, you talked about having editors and beta readers, and I gotta ask, why both? What are you looking for out of your editor that you're not getting out of your beta reader? If you're talking about proofreading and continuity editing on a professional level, then yeah, that's really something good to have a dedicated person for. If you're looking for a developmental edit, a story edit, then you shouldn't be giving this to your beta readers anyway, because it's not ready. The kind of editor you hear the legendary stories about, people like John Campbell or what's-his-nose that started Amazing Stories, the sorts of editors that made history by creating new market niches and genres, and who helped shepherd writers into greatness. Well, it's arguable how much of what they did actually created the greatness in the writers and how much of it just exposed it. But pulling that to one side, the era where people like that existed is over. The market conditions don't obtain. People like Campbell served four functions in one. He was a tastemaker, meaning that he had a sense of what the public was hungry for. His tastes lined up with the public's enough that he could get a sense of what he could sell them, and they were different enough that he could figure out how to extend them, how to develop that part of the market. And in the pulp era, that was something ripe for exploitation. That doesn't get done by editors anymore. That gets done by writers and by marketing people and by producers. The second function he served was as a mentor, a critical mentor. He was a fairly accomplished writer himself, and he was not bad. Some of his stuff was downright great. Most of it was fairly mediocre, but he was two or three steps ahead of the writers he was editing, at least at the beginning. And so he was a senior writer who could mentor them, who could say, hey, look, what you're doing here doesn't work. Go back and rework the thing with an eye towards making this part stronger. And his writers would go do that, and they would come back with something he liked better. Sometimes they didn't like it better. Quite frequently, when serialized novels he edits made it into book form, they did not make it into book form with the Campbell edits. They went back to the way that they were originally written. But even with that being the case, it's undeniable that many of the writers that worked with him found his feedback seriously valuable. But why did they find his feedback valuable? Well, because he had that tastemaker quality, but because he was also a pretty damn good writer. And he was a better writer than they were, at least at the start. And you notice how quickly he started losing the highly talented writers once they passed him in skill and craft level. They started going on to higher paying markets, and he took it personally. There were feuds that came out of that. So he was a tastemaker. He was a mentor. He and his people were proofreaders, which is super important. They would proofread everything. It was very unusual for typos to make it through to Campbell's magazines, which was a cut above some of the other pulps of the era. And in that, he would also do continuity. I've read some of his articles. He was ruthless with continuity. He was very good at it. And finally, he had a really good eye for talent. He was like a football talent scout or a Hollywood talent scout. He understood what qualities to look for in a person to be able to tell if they were worth him pouring his effort into. So he would pick the winners based on the first few conversations. And people who can do that are fairly mercurial, frankly, because they need to be, and touchy. But he was able to spot someone who had the internal drive and the savvy to become a world-class writer, and he had a very good hit rate. Kingmaker is the thing I'm thinking of. He was a kingmaker, and kingmakers don't usually have a very high hit rate. And in his industry, in that industry, it was like it is now. Writers come and go, they drop like flies. The people that have the character and the personality qualities to stay long-term and to really grind it out and not to be bogged under by it in 3 or 4 years, if you're a mentor or a kingmaker or a tastemaker or any of these other things he was, you have to learn to spot those qualities, or your whole life is going to be subsumed by people who have a good attitude or who have a lot of talent, but who don't have the persistence and the drive and the hunger to really make it work. And Campbell could spot that like nobody else. Well, there have been a few others that could spot it, but he was one of the great editors upon whom the archetype is sort of based. Nobody does that anymore. Not only does nobody do that, but nobody can. I mean, the closest you're going to come nowadays to someone like that is John Joseph Adams, and he's nowhere near Campbell's league in terms of what he's doing. The literary agent who wrote Writing to Sell. There was a literary agent who did the same thing for many, many years, and he's sort of got that same mystique about him, and he's one of the other sources of this archetype. I can't remember his name. It'll be in the show notes. Anyway, his trick was that he employed a bunch of his best literary clients when they were having slow times as readers, and they would pretend to edit stories in his name. So, like, Lawrence Block made a living for a while editing for him and stuff like that. The qualities that you go to look for when you think of an editor, you know, the developmental editor is what a lot of people are calling them now, but even they don't do all of this stuff. what you're actually talking about looking for is someone who is a proofreader and a mentor and a marketing guru, a tastemaker. And people who do that professionally, even when they know their stuff, are kind of full of shit. In Campbell's world, you could judge the quality of someone as an editor by the sales they generated. No one does that anymore. There's no way to gauge the quality of an editor because there's no accountability in the marketplace. All they have to do is make you feel good about what you're doing. You don't know if they're helping you out or not. So instead of that, what I really recommend to people is that they find people who are better writers than they are, who are willing to take them under their wing. Or they submit stories, short stories, to magazines that are edited by people who are primarily writers. You will always have problems with taste and other stuff, but you will at least be getting feedback from people who are better at the craft than you are. They may not be better artists, but they will be better craftsmen than you are. Only you can develop yourself as an artist, but a good mentor can really help develop you as a craftsman. And that's where the real value in that kind of an editor is. As Joe Esterhaus told me once, and I don't know him, I met him at a book launch and was able to bend his ear for a half an hour because he spotted that hunger in me. And he was kind enough to give me some of his time that he wouldn't normally have given. He said, look, people running around Hollywood, because Esterhaus wrote Basic Instinct, Jade, Jagged Edge, Showgirls. He was the highest paid screenwriter in Hollywood history for a long time. Really weird guy. But really fun to listen to stories. I was at a book launch for The Devil's Guide to Hollywood, and so I went up afterwards to have him sign my book, and I asked him, you know, if there's anything not in the book that I should know. And he said, yeah, everyone who's selling you writing advice is full of shit. By the way, I recognize the irony that this podcast kind of does that. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And I said, why? He said, because they've all sold one or two screenplays. You want writing advice, you go to someone who's done at least 10 more projects than you have. And if you want good commercial writing advice, you go to someone who's sold 10 or more projects than you have and has made money at it. I said, well, what about? And he said, no, that's it. If you want to learn something, you learn from people who are better than you at the thing you want to learn at. And I think he's right. Every writing mentor I've picked up since then has deliberately been someone who's better than me. And I've learned something really important from each of them, and I've written a lot more than I would have had I listened to the writing mentors I had at the time that I met him, because the writing mentors that I had were not very good. And it's not that I didn't learn anything from him either, but the difference in my own career and that mindset switch was profound. So for what it's worth, that's the thing about editors. If you want to hire an editor, you actually need to know what you're hiring. You don't just want to hire an editor. You want to find someone who has the qualities that you are looking to advance in your own work. Then you pick based on a field of people who fit that mold. And if no one fits that mold, go without. Find remote mentors, people who've written books on stuff or taught master classes or whatnot that you can get a hold of who fit that mold, and attempt to apply the advice you get in those classes and in those books to your own work, much like you have done from time to time with this podcast. And just keep your eyes peeled for people that you might meet at conventions or libraries or any place that bookish people congregate that might make a suitable mentor for you in the areas that you're looking to improve. And if they're willing to actually read your stuff, that's a bonus, because mentors normally won't, because frequently they're doing the same thing. They're reading the people who are better than they are because they want to get better. So for what it's worth, that's what I would advise. And also pick up Joe Esterhaus's Devil's Guide to Hollywood, link in the show notes. Very good book. And with a lot of advice that's applicable to fiction writing and not just to screenwriting. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian, and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.